race to savings. Now at Menards, we have what you need to give your bathroom a fresh, updated look. Shop Menards' great selection of bathroom products from American Standard. No matter the size of your bathroom, American Standard offers a superior line of toilets, faucets, and more. Complete your bathroom update today with American Standard. Plus, view our weekly flyer on Menards.com and race to savings on more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
With Car Guru's Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and Car Guru's Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder Car Guru's is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with Car Guru's at CarGurus.com. Go to CarGurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CarGurus.com. CarGurus.com.
What's up, everyone? Welcome into the All-22 NFL Show, the official channel of the All-22 Fantasy Football platform. It's the only fantasy football game with full 53-man rosters, including offensive linemen, where you get to choose personnel packages and have access to PFF grading and advanced stats to make decisions each week. To learn more and sign up, go to all-22.com. Ray, this is the biggest week in football. This is why we do this. This is what we're all here for. It's Super Bowl week, my man. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I got my shake with me. Like you said, it's Super Bowl week. So yeah, I'm just counting down the days. We are 5 days away from Super Bowl Sunday. Yeah.
And I think I ask you every year, and I'm going to continue to ask you every year, what is on the menu at your house?
I mean, I don't know yet. I don't know. My wife's planning that. I'm sure it's going to be wings. Okay. I'm sure it's going to be, giant Italian hero. Of some sort, a lot of meat, a lot of chips, a lot of dip, just a bunch of unhealthy stuff. So I got my nice shake today, but come Sunday, it's I'm gonna gain like four whole ounces. I'm gonna gain like four whole ounces of body weight.
I'll gain the 4 pounds for you then.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're not responsible for any of the food.
I'm not responsible for anything, and that's for the best.
All right. Well, I am responsible for the wings, and I have a place called Handshakes in Hopewell, New York. Just shout out to Handshakes. I think they're the best wings in our area. And then, I'm going to do some guac. I make guac, so that's on me. And then
you make the guac?
Bring some beer. I make the guac myself.
Have I ever had your made guac?
I make it for the Super Bowl. I've never made it another day. So probably not. Unless you want to come over.
Thanks for saving some for a friend. I had no idea about, It's only been 25 years.
You can't save guac, man. It turns brown. I know there's people out there that are like, you put the lemon on top, you cover it. You got to eat it fresh or it's not that good.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't know if it's good or not because you never told me this. So.
All right. Well, anyway, very exciting stuff with the Super Bowl this week. And we wanted to do a little bit of a preview, maybe make some predictions. Ray, I know you're not like a huge prediction guy, but let's kind of talk about it. I think there are a few really interesting things about this matchup, right? Because we've kind of gone through, I don't know, if you're between 15 and 30 years old, you've probably had Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes in like every other Super Bowl of your life. This is the first year without that, in my opinion, right? Like in some time, we haven't had a game where there's not this like mega superstar quarterback in the game. And instead, I think we have what's really a battle of balanced teams, which is something I'm super excited about. Makes the year a little bit more interesting when we get matchups like this. I was trying to think when the last time we had a matchup without a superstar quarterback. Not sure if you like have that off the top of your head.
No. I think because like man. Jimmy Garoppolo is offset by like Mahomes, right? So
right.
Yeah, we had Cam Newton was a superstar, and then we just had very old Peyton Manning. Like, no, it's been a long time. Which is why quarterback is the highest rated position on the platform. But yes.
And people might be looking at this and being like Drake May, but like, I think it's too soon, right? Like Drake May is still in his second
MVP
year.
Conversation.
Yeah, but it's too soon, man. It's too soon. In my opinion, to be like superstar quarterbacks in it because Drake May's in it. Like to me too soon. So anyway, for me, it's really that balance of offense and defense. So just looking at some high level numbers, right? Seattle ranks second in offensive team grade with an 86.0. Patriots are sixth with an 82.1. So they're both top 10 offenses. And then on the defensive side of the ball, Seahawks are third in team defense with an 84.5. Patriots are seventh within 78.8. So again, two top 10 offenses, two top 10 defenses. Both quarterbacks are playing extremely well, but that's not what this team has to rely on to win the game. And we could get a little bit more detailed even in this conversation where it's where the difference is going to start to show up in this game. What is going to start to make a difference? I don't know if you have any opinions. Let me know what you think, and then I could go into some things that I found.
Yeah, I love saying styles make fights because I think stylistically this matchup is probably, before really digging in, beneficial for the Patriots in that what the Seahawks do well doesn't necessarily exploit the weakest parts of the Patriots roster. When you look at the Patriots roster on paper, we said it all year, and people are you know, over-memeing it basically about their road to the Super Bowl, the easiest schedule in the league, and then you know, they have to play a backup quarterback in the AFC Championship game with the elements and so on and so forth. I get all that. But in general, yes, it's not the strongest. If you just look at the roster on paper at a glance, it's not a Super Bowl caliber roster, likely because we don't love the offensive line, at least as far as pass blocking goes. They're not the greatest. They've crept up back to average, which is a good thing compared to what they were previously. But the Seahawks, I think, more exploit sort of the interior of the line, kind of, you know, they run the ball well and they can stop the run pretty well. I don't think they're going to exploit the edges too much in pass protection. So I think that's a benefit to the Patriots because, yeah, I could hear and understand the argument that it's not really a Super Bowl caliber roster, but I don't think the Seahawks have this overwhelming sheer just force of talent to really take advantage of that and just make this a no contest before, you know, really getting into the details and the finer details that can define these games.
For sure. And it's funny because, like, if you were to draft an all 22 team and you ended up being a team that had to pick 10th or 12th, or if you're in a 16 team league, 16th, right? There's a chance that you're like not going quarterback. And if you look at how the Patriots in Seattle are built, it's kind of like they are one of those teams, right? Like where they're very well-rounded everywhere. Maybe they got like Jaxon Smith-Njigba in the first round. They have their offensive tackles, but they're like very, very well-balanced teams. I do think there's one thing that's interesting to me where it's if Seattle can really establish the run early. We're talking about a defense with the Patriots that had a 65.0 run defensive grade, which isn't bad by any means. It's not bad. But when you look at Seattle and that they had a 91.1 run grade and a 68.6 run blocking grade, you kind of look at that and go, if Seattle can establish the run early, like they've kind of done throughout these playoffs, that's going to be their road to success. And I could really see a situation where Kenneth Gainwell is sitting on the podium at the end of the game with MVP trophy, because that's the kind of thing that really you look at and you say that could be the differentiator in this game. And that's the thing that really stuck out to me. I think the other thing, right, like, neither of these teams have the most legit NFL like pass rushing groups. Like this isn't a team with Micah Parsons or Myles Garrett. Like they don't have those guys. They have good pass rushers. Don't get me wrong. They have good ones, but it's again, it's more balanced. It's more Christian Barmore for the Patriots on the interior. And you know, the Seahawks have a few guys like Byron Murphy and Leonard Williams on the interior, where that's really the strength of these kind of defensive fronts. But will one of these teams be able to kind of effectively pass rush to be able to disrupt kind of the offensive flow of the game? I'm thinking maybe not.
Yeah, it's interesting. You just take a look and it's like, okay, who's the best edge rusher or edge player in this game? It's DeMarcus Lawrence. That's the guy whose impact is most felt on the ground. So I think to your last point, and yes, he meant Kenneth Walker, everybody, relax, not Gainwell.
Dang it.
Yeah, it's better than the pronunciations, so we'll take it.
Yeah, take it.
In any event, that favors the Seahawks because you can at least look at their offensive tackles here with Charles Cross and Abraham Lucas and say, all right, they've got the advantage on that front. They're probably going to give more time for Sam Darnold. And that plays into Sam Darnold's hands. The Patriots defense doesn't take away, or, you know, they're not built to take away what the Seahawks do well, which is running the football. The run offense for the Seahawks is stronger than the run defense for the Patriots, just at a pure glance. And that's helpful to Sam Darnold. because he's not the type of quarterback that, despite how much we love Sam Darnold, and I am so vindicated that he is now in the Super Bowl after waiting, what, 8 years now for this to happen. He's not going to just take over a game from start to finish and just completely overwhelm you if you're his defensive opponent. He's more of a work off of what the offense is doing well, picks his spots, and then kind of hits you with a dagger late. That's kind of Sam Darnold's formula for success. And the way the defense of the Patriots is built, they're going to have to bring numbers in the run game, which can play into that sort of dagger from Darnold to Smith and Jigba, or play action to Rashid Shaheed. That's kind of what he does well, and they play into that. I mean, I think for both safeties there, Woodson and Hawkins for the Patriots are two of the top four best run defending safeties in the NFL. And that's awesome. That's great. They're actually, you know, really good young find, especially Woodson coming on this year. But if you're going to have to rely on those numbers in the run game, you are making yourself vulnerable, especially if you don't travel Christian Gonzalez and have him shadow someone like Smith and Jigba, because of how that could limit you schematically on defense. It's a bit of a chess match, and it's kind of the upper hand, I think, goes to Seattle on that front because of their line and the ability to protect Darnold from that standard pass rush and use play action to make him more comfortable.
All right. So why don't we go through kind of like position group against position group, and we'll just say, like, who do you think wins the matchup? Like, if you had to choose between, let's start it off, Seattle offensive line versus Patriots defensive front, who are you taking?
I got to take the Seahawks offensive line.
Okay. If you were going to go with the Seahawks receivers or the Patriots defensive back group, who are you taking?
That's my favorite matchup of the, that's my favorite matchup of the Super Bowl. I'm still going to go Seahawks receivers, but, okay, but it's close. It's close. Closer than you would think.
Okay. Let's flip it. If you were going to go with the Patriots offensive line versus the Seahawks defensive front, who are you taking?
Yeah, don't make me do this, Chris. You're going to make it sound lopsided. It's Seattle.
Okay. If you're going to go with Patriots receiving group or Seattle defensive back group, who are you taking?
I'm going to take the Patriots receivers.
Whoa. Because, no, you're not. Listen, no, you're
yes,
not.
Yes. Listen, Josh Jobe, if he plays 25 snaps, we have a name for this. Okay. We have a name for this. We're going to use a different word. Mm-hmm. Find the scrub. Okay. The Patriots are going to do that. They're going to find Josh Jobe in coverage. Okay. And they're going to just spam that like one of these like Gen Z, like Call of Duty players with the new sliding mechanics and everything else. I know you have no idea what I'm talking about, Chris, but it's a thing, and it's ridiculous. But okay, Josh Jobe, I think, tilts that in the favor, even if he's just on the field for 22 to 25 snaps, tilts that in favor of the Patriots, because I think they do a great job of finding space for their receivers and scheming them open, I think, better than anticipated when you really dig into it. So I'm gonna give the edge there to the Patriots receivers.
So for you, the kind of thing to look for in this game is spam the scrub. And for me, it's can Seattle establish the run? So those to us are going to be the differentiators in this game. From your perspective, who's winning MVP?
Oh, I hate predictions. Whoever lines up across from Josh Jobe the most. No, I don't know. Look, it's going to have to be Drake May if it's the Patriots. If it's the Seahawks, it could be Kenneth Walker. It could be Smith and Jigba. Don't make me do this.
If it was the Patriots, it could be a defensive player, right? It could be whoever forces turnovers, right? If somebody gets a couple picks or a couple sacks, like, it could be a defensive player for the Patriots.
If it's not May, it's going to have to be. I mean, so here's the thing, right? Christian Ellis, the fourth highest graded pass rusher at linebacker in the league this season. We talked about it a little bit earlier. The Patriots are going to have to bring numbers if they want to affect both the run game and the pass game, the pass rush, because the Seahawks are a bit stronger, especially on the edge of that offensive line there at tackle. So they have to bring numbers and kind of manufacture some pressure. Christian Ellis is the guy to do that. So yeah, he could have, maybe he gets a strip sack six or something like that. That could happen, but he is a key factor in the game for me. on defense for the Patriots, because stylistically, if they have to bring additional pressure, he's the guy to get that done the best. So I'm looking at Christian Ellis, linebacker for the Patriots, as an X factor, if you will. Do they still call those that? Is that like a thing in Madden? I don't know. I haven't played that since it was good back in 2005. So yeah, but X factor Christian Ellis on the Patriots. I think he's going to have a big role if they're able to stem the Seahawks offense.
Okay. All right. So with that, I already said mine, right? I said Kenneth Walker is who I think will be MVP of this game.
I just threw out like five names and just said whatever. I have enough there that I could just be like, yeah, I was right. You know,
yeah. That's typically your stance. You just literate and then you're like, yeah, I got it right. I'll do a Patriot one though, just in case. Drake May.
Just said it would happen.
Just kidding. I actually had a kind of a funny thought, not necessarily funny, because like you know my stance, right? Like guys with like bad criminal records, I typically like will just cut them from my team. Like, what does the NFL do if Stephon Diggs has like 300 yards and Drake May only throws for 300 yards? Like, do they give it to Diggs? He's like has like a criminal suit against him right now.
Bro, is there like a monetary reward? Or do you get like an extra like $50,000 for being the Super Bowl? Or he gets a car, right? Do they typically give you like a car?
Something.
And then you have to pay taxes on that. But I mean, because he's had like five kids this year, so he'll probably have to sell the car and just to support his offspring at this point. Because he's in his 30s now. His career's not going to last much longer. But I think he needs it. I think they want to help him out because they don't want that to be like, you know, a bad – you don't want him to go down the wrong path just to try to support his family down
for
the
sure.
line. So
we're here for the kids, for sure. We're here for the kids.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know how he got there, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, because I was saying like my MVP for the Patriots. Yeah. Okay, the over-under on the game right now is 46.5. Taking the over or the under? That's only 23.5 points a team, right? Like, it's not that much in today's NFL.
I'm going to go over because there is no top flight sort of game-wrecking pass rusher that makes it really hard on the offense to move the ball, especially between the 20s. I'm going to go over.
I'm going to take the under. I'm going to take the under because I really think Drake May is not going to be able to move their offense the way they had been. They're not going to score a ton of points. The Seahawks are going to get ahead early. And then I see the Seahawks kind of coasting the second half. Wow. I see the Patriots trying to throw a bunch of passes, right? But it could lead to turnovers with that Seahawks defensive back group. So I'm going to take the under on the 46.5. I'm happy we disagreed on that. The spread is 4.5 points in favor of the Seahawks. Do the Patriots cover that?
I could see like 27, 23, you know, 30, 27. I could see that. So I'll say yes. And I have like a little ace in the hole that I hope they have an ace in the hole for that, which we'll talk about a little later because it's not most pertinent to the spread per se. But they cover.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to say they cover just because Vegas doesn't allow things not to go in their favor. And I think a lot of people are either going to be going the under on this one. So what's going to happen is like the Seahawks are going to be up like two touchdowns with like a minute left and they're just going to let them score a couple points, to get that.
That's going
to
work. Okay. This is fantastic.
And then do you have a prediction for first TD? Just kind of going through the prop bets.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be, you know what? I am way higher on the Patriots than you are right now, even if I might not pick them for this game.
Okay.
I'm just going to go Travion Henderson. I'm going to keep it real simple, Travion Henderson.
Low-key, that could be a good MVP pick, right? Because he's the kind of guy that could make a huge impact on this game. If he ends up breaking a couple runs, right, like big runs, scores a couple touchdowns, like that's a good MVP pick. I like that, Ray. That was out of the box there. I'm gonna go Kenneth Walker for the first TD. Oh, just going to say Kenneth Walker. Kenneth Gainwell, actually. Let's go back to
Kenneth Gainwell.
Yeah, he's going to be the first TD. All right. Well, what's your point you were going to make before? What is that relevant to?
So we just sat here. We went position by position, right? We threw out a couple potential key under the radar players, right? Christian Ellis, you know, Josh Jobe. That might not be so under the radar. I guarantee he's not under the radar in the film room or in the offensive game plan for the Patriots. I'm not going to ease up on that one at all. And I know he like was better in the second half, I think, of the year, but no. he's still like this, the 80s when it comes to just overall just coverage effectiveness among all corners in the league right now, in man or zone. It's just not a pretty picture whatsoever. But there's always, or not always, but often a trick play here or there, right? You think back, Antoine Randle-El throwing reverse touchdown passes to Hines Ward and things like that. There's always some type of well-timed trick play that can turn the tide. I think the Patriots are more likely to do that here than the Seahawks. I feel like that's more the Patriots' realm here. You call it at the right time, kind of, you know, entering that middle eight or exiting that middle eight of the game, when, you know, things may be slipping a little bit, or maybe you're kind of getting the edge a bit and you can really just kind of hit a haymaker that the opponent doesn't seem coming. I think the Patriots are more apt to do that than the Seahawks. And that type of stuff just changes the entire complexion of a Super Bowl. So I'm looking for who executes the best trick play. And if there's none, I'm going to be pissed, because I think that's an actually critical part of Super Bowls, given the extra time to prepare, the, you know, the magnitude of the game, you're letting it all hang out. I'm looking for who gets the best trick play. And then also Kayshon Boutte. I know we referenced and people think of Rashid Shaheed as like the deep threat who can get behind the defense, has the speed, you know, play action, Seattle, all that. Like, that's, it's a great fit. Yeah, that's fine. But, and that's all great. But Kayshon Boutte, whatever. I'm just going to roll with whatever just feels right at the
just
time.
Just say Boutte.
Yeah.
I want to keep hearing literally you say Boutte.
Yeah. 48% of his passing yards for the season came on throws of 20 yards or more. And I think on like 10 total targets. So he is just as effective of sort of a deep downfield receiver as anything else in his game. Mm. If the Patriots can get that going, that I think is another one that can just kind of just slope the field more in their favor, tilt the field more in their favor, because you're going to have to do something there. You're going to have big plays. They cannot stay ahead of the sticks and in rhythm on offense as well as the Seahawks down to down. That's the Seahawks play, right? Down to down, just kind of wear you out run game. The Patriots are going to have to hit some playmakers here. And I don't think it's going to come from Diggs. I think it could come from someone like Kayshon Boutte. And then again, a well-timed trick play here or there, perhaps a big run that's broken free from Travion Henderson. They're going to have to hit home runs to win this game. And people aren't talking about Kayshon Boutte enough and the potential for that to happen. So I'm looking at Kayshon Boutte as a potential under the radar, just sort of game breaker here who can break things open for him.
Yeah, another great call out. And it's kind of more about the coaching, right? Like, everybody talks about Josh McDaniels as being, you know, one of the worst head coaching hires, like twice, that we've seen in our lifetimes at least. But at the end of the day, like, he's a fantastic offensive coordinator, right? Like, he's been to multiple Super Bowls and he's done great things as an OC. I would not put it past the Patriots to be able to kind of come up with some great plays like that. So I agree with you. I think that's a great stance. I also think, like, that's also a good call out in the fact that this game may come down to which coaching staff does a better job, right? Like, it might not just be about the players on the field making big plays for their team. It could really be about what coach is kind of coming up with the best kind of off the cuff plays. I love that. So which team is winning this game, Ray?
The team whose coach is kind of pulls the right levers and pushes the right buttons is going to win this game. In all seriousness, because there's not like a dominant quarterback or a fully just dominant unit as far as one side of the ball over the other. Like we're not, neither of these teams, as good as they are, especially the Seahawks, there's no Houston Texans defense here that we go, damn, they just overwhelmed the opponent here, just had six sacks and there was just nothing they could do. It's not that kind of game. We're not going to have, the Rams scoring six total points or whatever the hell it was a few years ago, right? When McVay was just completely shut down. I think it's close enough that it is going to be that coach that turns the levers. And if I had to put money on it, which I don't because it's not a betting podcast, I would on the Seahawks, but I'm going to sit here and say I think I have more faith in the Patriots to turn those proper knobs at just the right time, push the right buttons to eke out a victory. So for the podcast, I'm going to say the New England Patriots. I hope I didn't steal your answer.
No,
of course I didn't because you've been ragging on them the entire episode. So,
well, I'm going to just go through, right? There's been a kind of post that's been going viral and I'm going to take you through it. So in week one, the Patriots played the Raiders who fired their head coach. In week two, they played the Dolphins who fired their head coach. In week three, they played the Steelers whose head coach resigned. In week four, the Panthers. In week five, the Bills who fired their head coach. In week six, the Saints. In week seven, the Titans who fired their head coach. In week eight, the Browns who fired their head coach. In week nine, the Falcons who fired their head coach. In week 10, the Buccaneers. In week 11, the Jets. In week 12, the Bengals. In week 13, the Giants who fired their head coach. Then they had the bye. Then in week 15, they played the Bills again who fired their head coach. In week 16, they played the Ravens who fired their head coach. In week 17, again, they played the Jets. And in week 18, they played the Dolphins who fired their head coach. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games, and really only three teams because a couple of them are dupes, that didn't lose their head coach this season that the Patriots beat. That doesn't give me a lot of confidence in actually how good this team is. And then again, I talked about how the Patriots in this playoffs, they played the Texans, who if you would have asked me before the season, I probably would have predicted they would have gone 7-10. And instead, they were fighting deep into the playoffs. And they beat the Broncos, who I think probably would have been the best team from the AFC to be in this game had Bo Nix not gotten injured before the game the Patriots beat them in. So I don't know. I really believe this is the first matchup where the Patriots are facing very, very good competition. On top of that, or I'd say counter to that, do you really want to bet against the team that has all the luck happening for them and on their side right now, right? Like, it's like, why do I think that luck is just going to end, right? Like, Sam Darnold has like his oblique thing going on. Like, what if Sam Darnold, you know, God forbid, like, right? I don't want to say that. I'm still picking the Seahawks, but that whole conversation was to say there's one team with a whole bunch of luck on their side right now, and that is not the Seahawks.
All I heard was that Mike McDonald should update his resume based on that listing there. Yeah, sometimes, well, it's always better to be lucky than good, and sometimes you just have a horseshoe up your ass, and like that could just be the Patriots this year.
Yeah,
which is basically what I'm riding for this pick here, because we went position by position, and the Patriots were like 1-6 overall. But yeah, let's just ride with the vibes, because you know it's one game left. Throw it all out the window. Like I said, they can turn the right knobs, push the right buttons, just enough to tilt things in their favor. But they're going to have to hit that trick play. Kayshon Booty is going to have to get behind a safety or two. Trayvon Henderson is going to have to break that long run. Christian Ellis may have to get that second level sack. It can happen. They had extra time to prepare. I think, you know, who am I, Chris, to bet no, against luck? Who am I to
we're
bet
not
betters
luck? Anyway. I don't bet.
Exactly.
So that's not something I'm going to do. This is a fantasy podcast. All right. Well, anyway, the next kind of thing we wanted to talk about was there is an award ceremony happening on Thursday night, and they're going to give MVP, Offensive Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, Rookie of the Year on both sides, right? All that fun stuff. But the thing that we are really excited about is the first ever Protector of the Year award. So I don't know if people saw it, but last year we did kind of a when they announced that this award was going to be a thing in 2026, we had some fun and we did it for 2025. And we decided it was Chris Lindstrom last year, who was amazing. This year, they released their finalists. And I'm just going to read you their names. And then I'm going to give you kind of a final three. And then I want to go through it together and figure out who we think the NFL Protector of the Year should be. But Garrett Bowles and Penny Sewell are the two tackles that got nominated. At guard, it was Joe Thuney and Quinn Miners. Nice.
Good job.
Right. You saw that. And then at center, we have Aaron Brewer and Creed Humphrey. That's very similar to the list that we discussed when we were kind of going through our player of the year by position, right? Making our all 22 team of the year. When we went through ours, we had Penny Sewell be the tackle of the year. We had Quinn Miners being the guard of the year, and we had Creed Humphrey being the center. So if you agree with me, I think we narrow the list further to those three guys, since we kind of already did that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're on pace for that. You're good.
I'm good. I'm good so far.
You're feeling good. Okay.
This is your segment. Run with it.
All right. Well, I'm going to go through. I'm going to read you some kind of numbers that I wrote down for each of them. Penei Sewell, I'll start with him, tackle for the Detroit Lions, played 998 snaps and finished first at tackle with a 95.2 offensive grade. But what truly made this year special for him was his 96.8 run blocking grade, which was 4 points higher than the second best tackle. Not something we see very often. Absolute bulldozer. His 11 hurries allowed were also the fewest in the NFL for a tackle. So not only was he the best run blocking tackle, he also led up the fewest amount of hurries amongst tackles. So having that balance, again, pretty special. Okay. At guard, we had Quinn Meinerz, another strong option, playing over 1,100 snaps at guard for the Denver Broncos. Quinn finished first at guard in both offensive grade and run blocking grade. He is a big reason why the Broncos made it as far as they did. And somebody I feel very strongly is the best guard in the NFL this year. Last but not least, we have Creed Humphrey, Creed Humphrey, center for the Kansas City Chiefs. Creed played over 1,000 snaps and finished first in offensive grade, second in pass blocking grade, and first in pass blocking grade amongst centers. I think easily he offers the best balance amongst this small group. I could give you some further details if you're interested. Otherwise, I think we have a pretty tough decision here to call out the protector of the year.
It's tough if you're going to use the left side of your brain, which that's the logic side. If you didn't know, Chris, I think someone fact checked me. I'm 90% sure it's the logic side. You know, but I'm the vibes guy. I've been vibing this entire podcast while you've just been trashing the Patriots. I'm going to keep the vibes going.
Whoa!
And I think that happens with these awards too. It's not always about sort of the nitty gritty details in the data. A lot of it is, you know, okay, well, how good was everything else around you too? How good did your team end up being? Did you make the playoffs? Were you in any iconic moments that anybody could just look back on and instantly recognize? And I think that's where someone like Creed Humphrey has a disadvantage, because this was a clear down year for the Chiefs. They didn't make the playoffs. Mahomes got hurt, so on and so forth. It was just bad all around. Didn't meet expectations. Meinerz, people just don't talk about him enough for how good he really is. But again, he's missing those vibes, that public sort of persona, that iconic recognition, which is unfair to him because he just goes out there and does his job. And that's what we love. So we want to reward that, of course. But Penei Sewell is Penei Sewell. He has everything. He's done the dirty work. He checks every box and he has those moments. Okay. When you're casual and you go ahead and you turn on those Jahmyr Gibbs highlights and see how good he was, just look who's springing him downfield, whether it's a screen pass or just a super long run down the right side. It's always behind Penei Sewell, and Penei Sewell's always just doing even more, digging out another defender. It's hard to overcome that if you're trying to win an award over him. So the vibes are in Sewell's favor, along with the data too. So that's tough.
That is tough. There's something that just kind of pulls me back a little bit from choosing him. And again, while he was fantastic as a pass blocking tackle as well, he had a 79.4 pass blocking grade overall, which is not at the highest level that we've seen for him, right? And I agree with what you said about Quinn Meinerz as well. And I think a big reason he's kind of overshadowed is because Garrett Bowles is also there. They have two guys on this list, right? And it's an offense that was extremely well-rounded in a very well-rounded team. So he doesn't get recognition. So here we are, round of applause. I think he's finishing third on our list, but we're still going to give him a clap. My vote when we were going to do this was going to be Creed Humphrey. The balance is insane, Ray. Okay, we're talking about a guy, again, for his position, was first in offensive grading, 89.6, second in run blocking with a 90.0, and then first in pass blocking with an 83.3. That's just balance, right? Like, it's phenomenal balance. It is also the fifth year in a row. Again, we're just doing this for this year, but fifth year in a row where he has over 80 grading. Guess what? He's been in the NFL for 5 years. Four of those years, he's been higher than 89.0 grading. If you're going vibes, I understand Penei Sewell, the run blocking grade, that elite run blocking grade, over 96, insane. But if you're talking about somebody that's doing something different at a position where nobody else is doing it. To me, Creed Humphrey's doing something extremely special. It's kind of similar to what we were talking about Aaron Donald a few years ago. It's like Aaron Donald was doing something consistently at a position where people were not talking about it the same way they were edge rusher. Yet Aaron Donald was the guy that was the biggest difference maker for a team. Kind of feel like Creed is starting to build that repertoire for himself at center.
I love data. I love data. I like to lean on data. Chris, what's your favorite movie of all time?
I muted myself. That's tough. I think in my heart of hearts, it's Superbad.
Oh my. Okay. Never mind. All right. This might be second. Okay. This might be second, but you either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Ooh, okay? Good movie.
I'm going to become everything I hate and just go off of vibes. So I'm going to stick with my pick of Pinay Sewell.
Wow.
And I guess the people will have to decide.
I would love that.
But I'm going to go with the vibes. I think it's healthy to go, you know, sometimes you got to go through life just kind of, you know, riding the vibes, you know. And that's what I'm going to do. Maybe that's my month late 2026 resolution here. Just kind of, you know, just go with the flow, go with the vibes. But yeah, it's Pinay Sewell. And yeah, I'm biased. I have so many shares of Pinay Sewell. He's on my inaugural team. So I'm not going to go against that. He's my guy. I'm going to ride with Pinay Sewell. But yes, love what you're doing, Creed Humphrey. You're also a favorite of mine. You guys were too good to both have on my team at the same time. I couldn't draft both of you. You were both, it was just impossible. You both gone too early.
Check your inbox. I'm going to send you an offer for Penny. What do you think it would take? What would it take?
Wow. It would probably take maybe, okay, it's going to take more than two firsts. If I'm being nice, I won't ask for a third first, but I'll need like a quality player.
Oh, so two firsts and a quality player.
Yeah. Yeah. And not like a quality 31-year-old player. Like a legit. I need someone legit. That's an every week starter.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. You can't let go of cornerstone tackles. Like you can't. I understand you, especially if you're being effective in this platform, you're probably deep at offensive tackle because of its importance. But you can't, just because you're deep, give up
a
top of the line. There's levels to this, and Pinay Sewell is at that top level where, at his age, you're looking at nearly a decade more of elite play, and that's expensive. That's very expensive.
See, I have some regrets because I trusted the process, and I think the process was sound, where I had a late first and an early second, and instead of making an offer for a guy like Pinay Sewell or even moving up in the draft and drafting Joe Alt or something like that, I decided to be stubborn, stay where I was and draft JC Latham and Troy Fa'atanu with back-to-back picks. And it just hasn't gone super well. And those are two guys that I still feel really good about, but they just haven't taken that step yet. It's still early. Maybe it'll happen. But that's why it's like even a trade of two firsts for a guy like Pinay Sewell, like it just isn't enough.
Yeah, I think if you offer two firsts to the Lions right now for Pinay Sewell, they'd say no. And that's why all 22 is here, because we mirror that as close as we possibly can. I think Pinay Sewell would fetch a Micah Parsons level of return.
Yes.
In a trade. And
Sauce Gardner level.
Right. Yeah. And this isn't an instance where the owner is not in a hissy fit personal spat with the player to try to satisfy his own ego. So he's taking probably less than what he really should have gotten for the player. So, yeah, Pinay Sewell, it's going to take a lot.
All right.
Think you have an owner in your league who will trade Pinay Sewell for less, then you go ahead and make that offer right now.
Well, I know Andy has tried to reach out to me a bunch of times for Penny in one of our leagues together. So, Andy, you just heard the price. I don't even know if I'll trade him for that. Honestly, I think Ray was too low. I think I'd want more. But Andy, I'm calling you out, man. Send me some trades. But Ray, did you want to make any other predictions for the awards? Did you want to make an MVP prediction or anything like that?
No, I'm just going to be watching very closely the punter of the year. They matter. They're on the platform. I don't know who the nominees are. I don't know who the finalists are. But my I am going to tune in for that so I can learn who's such a great punter. Because that's important. You know, that is like 0.5%, and that can make a difference. So I'll be looking at punter of the year. MVP, I don't really care about the winner of these awards. I care about the contenders getting their rightful amount of pub for that award, and I don't think that really happened this year, even though they're not going to win it. And even though he's in the Super Bowl, Sam Darnold didn't get enough of that praise. Dak Prescott didn't get enough of that praise. Too many players that should have been deeper in the MVP conversation were just not this year, and that's a damn shame. So I really don't care who wins the award. I don't. I'm good for them for winning it. I care more about the All-22 MVP, and I'll have to listen back to that episode to figure out who we named for the All-22 Player of the Year in 2025 and 2026. But yeah, give me the punter of the year, the protector of the year, and hopefully next year we get it right with MVP and give even just the finalists and nominees who should be in that conversation their proper due.
So I just went to look it up, and NFL.com released an article on January 22nd where they released the finalists for all of their awards. They don't even have the Protector of the Year award listed in this. I know that they released it because I found it somewhere else. It's not even here, and there's definitely not a Punter of the Year award here. I was looking, I was like, is that what it's called, or is it just a Special Teams Player of the Year? Because I don't remember. It may be Special Team Player of the Year.
But that might be like a returner or some guy who just covers
punts. Right, which means punters never get awards, which is super sad.
This is why I watch college. This is why I watch college. Ray Guy.
The Ray Guy Award, right? Yeah. Is that what it is?
Yeah. The Ray Guy Award. We also have to take up our connects on that Maxwell. We're getting way off topic here, but we gotta utilize our connects to that Maxwell Award dinner at some point too.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, after a college football season. So yeah, your boys have we know some people. So
absolutely. Ray, what else you want to discuss today? That's all I got.
I hope both teams have fun and stay healthy.
Yes. Health.
Yes.
100%. That's, you know what, dude, I hate to say it, but when Chicago lost, I was like, Caleb's not going to get hurt this year. Knock on wood. I was like, you know, it sucks that, you know, for him, he didn't win, but he didn't get hurt. So for fantasy, I felt good about it. I don't love that, but selfishly, you kind of do have that thought.
Yeah. I mean, Trayvon Diggs had a TV allegedly fall on his head at his home, and that's why he was concussed and missed a month of the season. So it could still happen. If you believe the player,
Aaron Boone, so baby, go, you're never go play any basketball.
Yeah. You're never quite out of the woodworks there, but good health, good game. I do think it should be an interesting game because there is no sheer dominant force here. So
yeah,
I think we're in for a good one with some good food, you know, Snowmageddon's behind us up here in the Northeast. So I think it's just time to really set our focus on the final football game of the year and enjoy it. And then maybe we could talk about fixing the Pro Bowl after that.
Cool, man. All right. Well, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. If you haven't yet, give us a follow on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and X at @all22_PFF. And give us a review wherever you watch or listen to your podcasts. And enjoy the Super Bowl. Let's go.